And yet you, and yet I remember like a couple years ago, I happened to say the W word and was chastised for it.
Oh, no, you can call someone a wanker. I've got no issue with that.
Okay.
We're live on Facebook. I just said wanker. There you go. That's how much you care.
I just want to make sure I don't, you know, lose anybody's advertising.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like, it's a bit of a bugger. He's actually not, because actually, if you did the definition of the dictionary definition of what exactly the act is, then, you know, that's not a politically correct. God, bloody hell, man. Geez, I'm whatever. Don't use that term, Andy, yeah, because I can't work out what, no. But it's just like, bugger off. You know, it's gone down to being just a colloquialism now rather than being particularly offensive and descriptive of the act of that. So, hello, welcome to the Mac Show. To all the sponsors who are listening, I'm sorry. I'm here to discuss the week in Apple, all the stuff that's gone on, not much, admittedly says, although there is the earth-shattering piece of news that we're going to start with in a few minutes. But joining me, an absolutely stellar panel. If we don't get some sense out of this panel, I don't know what. Starting us off, Doc Rock, how the bloody hell are you, mate?
You know Jeff's here, right? Yeah, I'm doing good.
Is that for the common sense or for the lack of?
For the lack of. You know I'm teasing, Jeff. No, I'm good. It's good to be here. I'm tired of waking up. It's so early, though. So you guys need to stop this BST stuff. It's old school. We don't need it anymore.
Isn't it worse? It's not worse. Is it better for you in BST or worse for you in BST?
Whichever one allows me to get up an hour later, which is October to...
Yeah, so GMT.
March. Yeah, okay. That one's better.
Yeah, we love GMT.
We don't do daylight savings time in Hawaii. The rest of the U.S. does, we don't.
Right.
Because it's unnecessary. Okay. The modern era.
Fair enough. Next to him, Andy in Natco. We ain't seen you in ages, mate.
Absolutely. It's been too long, and I totally agree. I mean, I know it's like late in the afternoon where you're like you guys are in Britain, but yeah. It's like it's 11 a.m. here, okay? And it's not just 11, not just to have to be awake at 11 a.m. I had to be awake like an hour before that so that I could like be dressed and get some breakfast. And so you're not going to get me at my best today. I'm just saying. Also, also we're coming off a holiday, so my ears are a little bit imploded and... So basically you're getting 20% Andy, which is probably optimal now that I think of it.
20% Andy is optimal. Are you like a lithium ion battery? We can't charge you fully, otherwise we're in deep bubble.
We're usually looking at 10 p.m., 11 p.m., or whenever I have a scheduling conflict and can't show up at all. That's usually the best time to get a hold of me because I won't be sort of droning on and on and on about musicals that I really like, about, hey, there's a really weird like duck that hangs out with this other really weird duck on this pond that was on my walk on this morning. And I just usually these types of ducks only hang out with the same types of ducks. And I was wondering how like the like hunting decoy style duck came to like be in a relationship with like a totally like bleached white feathers duck. I'm very, very happy for them because I think it's a sign of progressive times and just simply accepting that love is love. I'm just curious as to how they managed to get introduced to each other. Was there an intermediary? Were they both like, was it like at a party where there's always that one place where people who don't like crowds wind up and they realized that they had common bonds? These are things that are on my mind. So again, I think the listeners would agree this is not peak Andy. This is not peak anything.
Ducks are such racists. As opposed to pecan time, which is dessert all the time.
That's not bad either. Although again, whenever I have pecan pie, I refer to it as a diabetes test because I figure that if I could eat a slice of pecan pie and not like go into whatever happens to you, if you're diabetic and you can't process sugar correctly, that you're doing okay. So,
well, that's
ketoacidosis.
Yeah. Well, that's hyperglycemia, isn't it? So, which is just tending to be like, I want more sugar and I got a bit of a dry mouth.
Yeah, true.
As opposed to hypo, which is like I'm going to die if I don't get some sugar. thanks, Dr. Andy. Next to him, Brett. Oh, I've forgotten how to drive. Jeez. Hello, mate. How are you doing? Really? That's awesome.
A normal person?
Yes. Yeah. Why? Yeah, okay. I get that. Have you looked your blood sugars up? You haven't checked your, have you been eating pecan pie? And then you get crabby. Man, that's a Molotov cocktail, isn't it? Yeah. at least you're happy, mate. That's all that matters. And last but by no means least in the panel, Jeffrey. Oh, hang on. It's not working. Why is it not? I've forgotten how to drive, man. Jeffrey Gamut. Who's, oh, that's why I'm pressing one and he's on four. Yeah, that would be good.
Sing salad. We call that the devil's lettuce around here.
How have you been, Jeffrey? Oh, good, good. I like that. The Week in Apple, I want to start off with an apology because someone sent us a question in that they wanted answering about a server-based system that was Mac-based and they'd had a fault with it and they needed to replace it and they wanted our advice as to what to replace it with. And I can't find the question. I have been frantically looking while I've been going through there, which is one of the reasons that I've probably been a bit crap at driving. So if you were listening, please send us the question back again. I did keep it. I did know I was supposed to cover it, but I just cannot find it in my emails. I don't know why. So I do apologize. Please send it again and we will get it sorted. Hopefully the people that we've got on the next show when it comes back with the question aren't a complete bunch of idiots. This panel would have been fantastic to answer that, but no. I hope you're watching live and you can send it straight through anyway. First story of the week has got to be the earth-shattering news that scissor mechanisms are coming back to Apple keyboards. Hallelujah.
Yeah, that I was. I think we're all kind of like worried about how deeply emotionally and like ego-wise invested is Apple in what was clearly a disaster to start with. You start off with like this the simplest part of a laptop to design is keyboard. You really have to put your shoulder into it to screw up a keyboard that is comfortable to use. And so even out of the box, you have a keyboard that. I think a great number of people, I'm not going to say most, I'll say a great number of people, including myself, found was absolutely unusable. And I literally have a ThinkPad next to me that I bought really cheap last year because I realized that if Apple sticks with this keyboard design and like I spill something on my 2015 MacBook, I can't buy a new MacBook because I can't use it. And then you start off with that where you made the decision, hey, how about half a millimeter of key travel? That sounds great. And then you follow that up with, wow, usually when Apple comes up with a really great idea, everybody rushes to copy it. And nobody was rushing to copy this 0.52 millimeter keyboard travel idea that Apple had. And then you come to the problem of, so long as you don't actually use it in a room where anything else is, then the keyboard will continue to work properly. Once you put a human being in there, once you actually type on it, then it gets destroyed, and then people will be upset, be charged $800. So I was curious to see. At some point, it seems as though you have to say, okay, we've tried something new. It obviously didn't work. We are now going to stop using this design, even though this does really this is as close to us admitting that we screwed up as is possible without actually introducing a folding phone that breaks within the first hour. So I'm glad that they were able to say, no, congratulations. We listen to you, and we're giving you a new 0.52 millimeter keyboard with extra shielding. You're welcome. No, please. So yes, this was good. This is good news. I'm not saying that this is like, I think it's interesting. I think this is a nice little dramatic piece of timing that almost like the day after Johnny Ive, master of There Is No Computer That Cannot Be Made Thinner and More Absurd, announces he's leaving Apple. we get the news that, oh, by the way, we're getting rid of that crap keyboard.
Now that the thin and absurd department has dissolved and gone to a new company.
Yeah, it's like maybe we'll get a port. Yeah.
Yeah. I quite like
$3,000.
Oh no.
This is like that episode of Seinfeld where like Elaine suddenly learns that her favorite contraceptive is being discontinued, and she knows that now at some point what I own right now, I'm going to be out of it, and I'm not going to have a solution after that. That's exactly, I'm so with you. It's like, I really have to make this 2015 MacBook work really, really great forever, or else I'm going to have to leave the Macintosh.
Oh, I got a phone call from a guy that is a friend. And he said, so are you getting the new Mac Pro? I went, no, but I'm taking the current Mac Pro I've got. I'm going to wrap it in cotton wool. Because I just cannot afford a new one.
As if it didn't have thermal problems already. Come on.
Oh, mate. Oh, doesn't it? It's great. I love it. It's the best computer I've ever owned. But it's just like, man, starting at 6K. Jeez. I liked the old keyboard. I liked the keyboard that they made. It felt nice to type on. Nice big keys. It was a slow, a short travel to get them to recognize. When they did recognize, I grant you, okay, fair point. But I did like the feel of the keyboard. I would rather they've just been able to make it work. But do you think that some of this is the mechanism and some of it is just the pushback of the fact that people said they hated how it felt? It is just purely the functionality of the mechanism, not a feel thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Jeff, can you Sorry, Jeff, can you come on line two, please, mate? Because apparently we've got no audio from you coming through on the main outfeed. Hang on. No, I know it's all right. I know why. Hang on. There we go. Speak now.
How about now?
Yeah, we got you. Okay, sorry, how mate. About now? Apologies. Yeah, that's my fault.
That's all right.
Duh.
That's all right. You saved people from having to listen. You saved people from having to listen.
Thank you, chat room. Always good to know you're watching.
Can I just add for 1 second, just respond just to your comment? I've gone further than that. Every time I've had a friend who like had a broken MacBook like 2015, I have like bought that broken MacBook for like $40 or $50 because I need a supply of spare parts to keep this old one running. I'm not joking.
Yeah, an Oregon farm. Yeah. Yes.
I totally get it. First time I've had a Mac about what I'm going to do when Apple Care runs up in a few months.
Well, I haven't been a fan of a low profile keyboard since the version of the aluminum Bluetooth keyboard before the Magic keyboard. That one, I like the feel of it. And I got the Magic keyboard. My laptop had a keyboard similar to the Magic keyboard. And I kept using that previous Bluetooth keyboard. And I'll admit, partly because the arrow keys are right and everything else was wrong.
Even compared to my 2015 MacBook, that aluminum Bluetooth keyboard has like a classic notebook profile. So that's I think the key travel is even deeper than my 2015 MacBook. It's a wonderful keyboard.
Yep.
Jock, you were holding up something there.
Yeah, it's that keyboard because I love this keyboard. I have five of them. And they just ready to go in case other ones crap out.
Have you ever seen the battery?
I came with a new keyboard. I don't really need that anymore. I said, okay, I'll take it because I love this keyboard. But yeah, my 2015 MacBook keyboard is never broken, and I can't type fast enough to hate it. So I guess I just got lucky.
Doc, have you seen those conductive batteries that you can put into that model of keyboard, and then you can slide it into a dock and it'll recharge?
Yeah, I've seen those.
Ooh, I need that.
Yeah,
I don't think they make them anymore, but they were cool.
I remember the 12 self-connector thing, so I can connect it and the trackpad together.
The magic wand, I think it was called.
That's the thing that always put me off that keyboard, was the fact of the recharging of the batteries constantly. So, I mean, I've got five of these. This is the original big wired keyboard. Probably about a bit older than what you've got there, Doc. And I've got five of these kicking about, so I am covered for a long time to come. And yeah, the cable's a bit of a pain in the ass.
Right,
but
there.
But the thing
that's
is,
what I use. That's my daily driver, is the wired keyboard you're holding.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. I've got my Logitech. Here's me Logitech's MX500, which is the best mouse ever made. There's my little me dongle for that, and it powers off the side of the keyboard, so I can actually unplug the keyboard, take it with me, and take the mouse with me, rather than having to worry about losing that. So basically, my MX500's got a dongle in constantly in the keyboards that I use.
Look, why can't Logitech make a mouse that doesn't require drivers and dongles? They make good hardware, but their Mac, it's crap software they make for everything.
Yeah, I'll go with that. No arguments here. It's not as crap as the Magic Mouse. We've had a comment in the Slack room this week, and some of the fanboys are going, oh, there's nothing wrong with the Magic Mouse. I'm like, it's too small. It needs to be 60% bigger.
It is a horrible mouse, but the Magic Trackpad is awesome.
Like, Apple have never made a good mouse.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Well,
never.
They've never made a good ADB or Bluetooth mouse. I was going through the closet and I pulled out my original like bar of soap, like original Mac mouse, and that's actually a very, very nice thing to have in your hand. But the Magic Mouse, I absolutely can't make it work. My finger, it's a I can buy like an $8 mouse from Alibaba, or go to the MIT flea market and buy whatever weird mouse is there. My hand will be a little bit unused to it for about 8 seconds, but eventually I know where the click button is. I know how I can slide and move it without disturbing things. I've never ever gotten the Magic Mouse so that anytime I'm operating it, my mind is not focused on using this mouse. And that is, people make fun of the fact that the charging port is on the bottom. Then who cares? It only takes a couple minutes to charge. It's not like you're going to leave it there. But I don't care about that. I care about something that's usable. I've often wondered, does Apple actually have? Do they have like squids designing these things? I'm not imagining that someone who grew up with human hands would actually think that these keyboards and these mouses are acceptable.
So here's
it,
the.
It was Johnny trying to be cool, and that and the Apple mouse with the little stupid P for the roller, the P mouse. I hated that thing because you inevitably go to somebody's house who uses their hands to do what before they use the computer. I don't know, but you would try to scroll that little P, and the P would be mostly stuck, and so you got to turn it upside down and rub it, you know, on a cloth to get the pee loose. And I was like, first of all, what are you touching when you touch your computer? But second of all, that thing was just dope.
Mate, you gotta remember, feces makes the world go around. Don't push back.
That was something that absolutely dispirited me about Apple's non-intelligent design. The fact that they would take this 0.52 millimeter travel keyboard, and if you buy a $5,000 iMac Pro, you get it's a desktop, which means I got plenty of. I'm not folding something on top of the keyboard. I don't need to save space. Give me a really great keyboard. No, we'll give you the same 0.52 travel keyboard that is on everything else. And we joke around a lot when manufacturers and designers kind of disappoint us, but this was one of those things that made me think, does Apple have any idea what they're doing anymore? It really got to me.
Yeah, here's the keyboard, look, or the mouse rather, the Apple mouse, the magic mouse that's over there for my little iMac. And the problem it got is, if you look at the size of my hand compared to it, I mean, I've got a fairly big hand, I grant you that, but that is too small for a lot of the small women that I know. And the problem is that people then pinch it when they try and use it and hold their hand off it. And that pinching mechanism is awful for carpal tunnel. And then you're starting trying to do finger gestures. If this was 60% bigger, it would be a palm control device, not a finger control device. And then you could use the fingers to swipe and move. Dead easy. So if anyone's listening, 12 South, if you're listening, make yourself a mouse, mate. Listen to me. I'm telling you. Apple, you've got a space for a designer. I'm available. Just saying.
You know, I would love somebody to make a kit where they send you a wad of clay, and then it's flat on one side, and you squeeze it, and then you send it back to them, and they make you a mouse that fits your hand exactly.
Oh, that would be it.
You're a genius.
Mold a mouse.
You know what I mean? Just like that thing for your headphones before, Edemotix used to, you know, mold your ears or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep. I would love to mold my own mouse. And I have,
what if they just made the mouse like putty, like a putty mouse that you would just form to your hand?
And you get the only residue on everything.
One side is flat and the rest is squishy. Because I have taken Subaru and added groups to my Apple mouse before to make it fit better.
I've got some sugar in the cupboard. By the end of the show, admittedly, the multi-finger gestures won't be working afterwards.
No, you got to put it on the back. You put it on the palm side, not the front side.
Have any of you ever used a vertical mouse? Have you ever used a vertical
mouse? Yes, I've used the one that's at an angle.
No.
Oh,
it's kind of like...
I haven't used one. I've considered it because mice in general hurt my wrist too much. I do way better with a trackpad. But they have these, and they're designed for ergonomics. And your hand goes vertically on it and like holds it and moves it around. I've never thought I could get used to it, but I know some people who swear by them.
So vertically is not. So basically, if you hang your hands beside you, then your arms are kind of coming across you. You think your hands are coming across you at like 45 degrees. So that angle of sort of 45 to 30 degrees from the vertical is optimum for neutral wrist.
Yeah, position. That makes sense.
So if you turn it vertically, then you're putting a bend in the wrist, which is going to be a problem. So you want that angle there. But ideally, what you want to do is have something that clearly just supports the palm and the thumb. And that's the MX500. Although I grant you totally correctly about your point about software, but that sits in the palm of your hand. And there's a thumb slider piece here that just fits my thumb in it. And it's the same size as my hand. And I bought two of these, and I've never had a problem with them. I've recharged them constantly, and it's because my hand physically fits over the top of it. That's all that a mouse needs to be.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I really miss my Kensington trackball, and it was funny because the billiard place nearby us used to get pissed off because when they were popular, they would always come up missing eight balls because the Kensington trackball and Stussy got popular at the same time. So anybody that was a Stussy fan had an eight ball in their Kensington trackball. And I loved that thing. It was great. And then this is old and passe, and I got rid of it, and now I wish I never got rid of it. Because the new ones look a little odd, and I haven't felt one recently to know if they're still as good as they used to be. But I might go back to trackball, because it was incredible.
I've been using a trackball since the Kensington release, back then it was an ODM, and wore it out, and I don't know if I can get it up, I had another one a couple months ago.
But I like it more than a regular trackball because it uses a smaller ball.
It's easy to manipulate with just a couple fingers. And Orbit's designed so it's great, which is great.
Can we just hold it there, fellas? Because apparently the audio shit. So.
To the left, I decided, well, let's just be a total idiot. Let's get out the third laptop, the ThinkPad, and let's open that up for IRC. So.
I know, right? This show's so 1990s.
But three screens is just to me like still the epitome of cool. Although I really do want like one of those super wide curved screens now, because those are I need to have whatever seems like the normal amount of screen to have. I just need to have that plus at least 20% to feel content.
I think we're back. Are we back?
Hopefully.
I found the email as well. Right, we're back. Sorry about that. We've had a bit of an audio issue, and we had a great discussion about mice that I didn't record. And we can't do it again, so, oh, well, never mind. But
listeners, you know what? It isn't always about you, listeners, okay? Sometimes yeah. We're just here to hang out and enjoy the company.
Yeah, you're accidental.
That's right.
And if you write any complaints, so anyway, going back to the start of the show, I found the email. So there is a positive. So the email's from Christian Cooper. You ready, fellas? Because he wants an answer. Hi, guys. Been listening to you for ages now. Really enjoy the shows. First, big thank you for all your hard work. My question is not really current, but still valid. I run a small studio, 5 people. We use a Mac Blade file server. It was great. Only had one job and it did it well. The main benefit of having Mac server was being able to search my content by files. Client would walk into the studio with a printout of a page of a publication that could be 3 years old. We'd have no idea where it came from, but by typing in a paragraph from the page, it would find and search the content and would bring up the source file. Everyone was a winner. Unfortunately, the Blade server died and had to be replaced. We consulted with a couple of companies and the decision to move over to a Windows-based file server was agreed. Due to Apple server hardware models becoming discontinued. Having the ability to search for our content was an absolute must. To enable this, a program called Acronis Extreme Zip, now named Acronis File Connect, was installed. This would enable us to view the shared drives on a Windows server via AFP, and also it would index the content of those files, print final PDFs and more, to be more precise, enabling us to search the content. Unfortunately, it never worked. And when it did, it was inconsistent. We even had the developers of the software set up our hardware so that they could not make it work properly anyway. No, I've read that wrong, but okay, you know what I've got. This was 2 years ago, and our service contract has now expired. I'm reluctant to throw good money after bad. So my question is, where do I go now? What truly can replace Mac file server? We need to have a certain measure in place, such as redundancy power, so I can only just buy a Mac Mini and a massive external device. I have an external drive. I have read that Synology NAS are able to index and search for our content, but I've no experience with these hardware. Any advice or suggestions would be welcome. Regards, Chris.
I would have said Synology right off the bat.
I've got three Synology NAS servers here, and they act pretty much just like I was searching an attached drive.
If we're just looking at the storage half of it, then it's not cheap to set up, but probably less than buying a Blade server back then.
Yeah.
And the other thing is for search capabilities, I would employ HudaSpot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yeah.
HudaSpot is basically Finder after
Spotlight.
a silicone injection.
I usually go with Spotlight on methamphetamine, but yeah, same idea.
Yeah. Now again, silicone injection. Where? I'm curious about. I want to learn something about your preferences in terms of where.
Mate, you're going to regret that.
It's collagen in the lips, really.
There's bikinis all
it's
day.
A file search boob job, and you know it.
We're not wrapped up, you know, in Snow Buddy and baked bean sauce, Andy. I think between Synology's built-in capabilities and the fact that it can do a hybrid of AFP and SMB, so you can run hybrid, run both at the same time, and the fact that with HudaSpot, it would just make it, the indexing is just better than what Apple index. If they were in love with Apple indexing, that's pretty incredible, because sometimes Apple indexing can be a pain in the butt.
Oh, so especially like on that, external servers. Adding
to it would just, woo.
Yeah. No, I just say, Andy, you were going to say some stuff there about NAS.
I was just saying that I'm very, very cheered to hear so much support for Synology, because I bought my first NAS was a Synology like 4 or 5 years ago, and even then I was sort of like holding my nose, closing my eyes, and taking a leap of faith, because at the time I didn't know that much about NASs, only that most of the people that I pulled that I respect said, oh, go Synology, you can't go with Synology, and I've had such a great experience with it that I bought a second one that was a little bit beefier. Last year, and it does seem like every time you talk to people who know networking, it's not like they're the only NAS out there, but everybody just seems to love Synology servers, all the way from people like me who are just want to have like office and home based like media and file serving and some network services, all the way to people who we're editing 4K to 8K video and we need like mass storage that's fast. Like people use acronyms that I recognize as being vaguely related to files and data, but I have no idea what they mean. Or say, oh no, I use the Synology, but it could also be, blah, 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 blah. And I just nod and say, wow, okay, I heard Synology and now I'm impressed.
Synology can run a Git server on it, so you can use it as a repository hub, and you can back up all your projects as you go. I know that's not a big thing for video, but I love that
I should try that. What I love the most about my Synology is that I originally bought it just as a central file server, so just and really almost anything could have done that job of. I want a box with hard drives that connected to Ethernet so that I could use it as a central file storage for my network. And every time I wanted to do something new, like, gee, I wonder what about, how about a media server? I would set it up on the Synology and it was beautiful. And when I wanted to do like a DNS server, it's easy to set up and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And now you've got me thinking that, gee, I've always kind of wanted to play with Git just for some of my own projects. And I'm thinking, gee, I could set that up on my Synology and it would probably be beautiful.
The thing that I liked about it was, I mean, when I said I was going to get one, Matt Cast was on the show and he said, oh, you better have your big boy setup pants on for that one, mate. Synology's not easy. And it couldn't have been farther from the truth.
It's so easy.
It was effortless. And
he might have got it when DSM Manager was sort of new. DSM Manager is on 6.8 right now. Yeah. So it's mature. It's like Andy said. You can name something, and it's great. And I don't know if you've tried it yet, Ewan, but from the photographer ilk, they've actually even added a media server that's like Plex for photos. So, like, you can run your Plex and stuff on it, of course. But if you're like us, you take lots and lots and lots of pictures, you just throw them at them. It catalogs all of that stuff, and it's really easy to find it. And you can even build a client-facing side if you need clients to peruse, pick, and pay for a file.
Yeah, the external access is really cool as well. That's the key. You just straight into it. If you've got the connection widget that you end up putting on the desktop, you double click that, type your password in, and you've got real time access to it.
Yeah. And speaking of Plex, Plex runs twice as well on my Synology than it ever did on my Mac Mini.
Really?
Yeah. Cool. And so I don't know if you know this, but in Synology's camp, so to speak, the one thing that freaks people out is when you go to log in and say you want to buy a Synology, they have various versions, right? Super simple. The DS is the disk station. The first number is the number of bays. The second numbers is the year that it was released. So right now, a DS, say 918 is basically 6 bays, 3 bottoms, and made in 2018. And what I mean bottoms is you can put MSSDs in the bottom to get the cache going, right? So you can always kind of tell how old it is just by the last two digits. And the other thing that's really cool about them, when there's a plus at the end of the nomenclature, that means it has the codecs in it to do the video compression, decompression, or encoding, and your Plex will run even faster because you don't have to transcode. It does it in its own little custom hardware that's built for transcoding, similar to the old Elgato Turbo H.264.
Right. Cool. There you go, Christian. I hope we helped. iOS 13 may allow users to transfer data between two iPhones over a cable.
Moving forward.
I don't know why that hasn't existed up until now, but I'll welcome it and laugh at the same time.
Well, it's just because I can't remember what we said, but I mentioned about going back to wired syncing, and Andy looked at me on the show at the time and went, his look was like, I'm going to call you a complete arse, but I better just check in my mind that I'm not. No, it is. You are a complete arse, Ewan. You were ever so polite about it, Andy. Of course, given. But
jeez. I apologize. I do think that like wired sync, there should be a place for it, because the thing is, copper almost always works. Like wireless, if it doesn't work, now you got to set aside the entire afternoon, because the tree of things that could be going wrong and preventing this from syncing is just way too long to have to deal with. Whereas cable on this end, cable on that, where hook it up with copper, it almost always works. And so I'm glad to see this happening. It's kind of cool that the same week, another nice coincidence, the same week that there's this story that, maybe you might be able to transfer files through the old-fashioned method of just hooking up a cable between two computers on the iOS side. On the Android side, there's big news that you might actually be able to like airdrop sort of things between two Android devices without a network in between in the next version of the OS. So I think it just shows you how much struggle there is to simply solve the problem of, I have a file on this device. My friend is 1 foot away and has full access to his phone. I just want to give him this file. It should not be this difficult.
Yeah, you get to the point of, dude, just have my password.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to transfer a 60-minute video like over the air to any machine?
Yeah, that too.
Be prepared for the fact, though, that may not actually be to do with the device. It could be to do with the fact of limitations of stealing movies, etc. Because there's an MP to
No, I mean, a video thing, I shot on my phone gets too big to deal with iCloud, too big to deal with AirDrop. I go straight to cable to get that to my machine and then put it where it needs to go. Mm.
Yeah,
you know, the funny thing about this is I get why they're doing it, because at the point where we're swapping phones coming from the, say, Max to whatever comes next, when you're coming from 256 gigabyte phone, moving all of that data, it just takes forever. So I mean, it makes sense, but then it seems like this should have always just been there, you know. And to agree with Brett, I use my phone with a phone gimbal to shoot a lot in Filmic Pro, and the only way to get the stuff out of Filmic Pro back to my computer so that I can edit it is to use like iMaze or, you know, iPhone Explorer or something faster, because trying to airdrop that mess always camps out at the very end. Like, it's, oh, this is working brilliantly. And it, crap, mother. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, it's such a basic thing. My daily phone is an Android phone, and to get music on it, this isn't the only way you can do it, but for me, the easiest thing to do is to simply plug in a flash drive into the Mac that has my entire iTunes library, copy the albums that I want, and then because it has both USB-C and USB-A, then just plug that into the phone and copy the file from the flash drive to where it needs to go. Partly because sometimes it is a lot of data. Sometimes I am like adding like 40 albums at a time and wiping my entire like phone library. But also because it will always work. When you make that decision of what technique or what technology are you going to use, because sometimes it's, well, the modern way and the convenient way is to use wireless syncing. But the thing is, it will be faster, but it might not work. Whereas I know that the flash drive is semantically it's no different than sneaker netting a floppy from one side of the room to the other. But it always works 100% of the time.
Yeah, Jeff, you were saying.
Yes, I know Apple's thing for a long time has been no wires. And yeah. I think it's been a noble idea, but everything that we've been saying totally backs up the notion that wireless for everything sounds great, but practically speaking, we still need the wires. So I am glad to see that Apple is embracing our wired overlords again.
Yeah, I mean, Bob's in the chat room just saying, haven't we just been praising wired keyboards? Wires just work.
Yeah. Well, also, it's the right tool for the right job. On a desktop, there isn't a whole lot of advantage to having a Bluetooth keyboard so long as you've got no problem with cable management. And again, if I plug in that mouse through copper, it will work, will absolutely work. Whereas the times where sometimes I might have to jiggle the mouse a little bit to wake up the Bluetooth connection, or if I use the Logitech, the proprietary, whatever wireless is that obviates that, well, now I'm taking up a USB port. And so if I'm taking up a USB port, why not use wires? That's the right tool for the right job. A wired keyboard would not be my preferred solution for my iPad when I'm going out with it, but for a desktop, give me wired, give me a chunky, loud key switch sort of keyboard too. The right solution for the right job.
Sadly, however, you look at the icon that was in iOS 13. It's showing a notch with a Touch ID phone, so it looks like you might end up. It's a possibility that wiring is only for the purpose of transfer of data. From an old to a new.
Well, even if it's just a migration thing, that's still an improvement.
Yeah,
because setting up a new phone wirelessly, it takes a stupid long time.
Well, this takes out the first 2 days, or first 3 or 4 days, rather, of a new phone release, and iCloud service is sucking wind because everybody's downloading, 200 gigabytes of crap from the old phone to the new phone. So if you have a large component of people using cable to move it, that leaves the highway for iCloud to be a little bit more open. So what it was doing was kind of ruining the old user experience and the new user experience, because both sides would have a hard time. And you'd always have people on the first couple of days, well, I was trying to set up my phone and it doesn't work anymore because it got bricked halfway in the middle. So we'd have to do factory reset and blah, 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 and help people start over again. But you figure people with data caps too, that's always been a punk when they wanted to move their stuff. Because for whatever reason, people never really got good at put your tarball on the machine, plug the new phone in, put the tarball back. It was super simple, but not that many people did it once OTA came out.
Right.
Fair enough. And there's too much of an assumption from system designers that, well, of course, it'd be wrong for us to assume that they'll always have access to the internet, but they'll always have access to Wi-Fi. So why? No, you don't always have access to Wi-Fi, partly because Wi-Fi is not absolutely everywhere. And sometimes you're in a hotel room where the local, where the Wi-Fi system is going to cost you, is going to be a security problem, and it will put you through all kinds of jumping jacks in order to make it work. Again, it's so frustrating when I have a device here. I have a device right here. I've got a cable that could connect the two. Why is this so difficult?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Ive became dispirited after the Apple Watch was shit. And so, that's not what the story says. I just made that up. And sometimes failed to show up to meetings, said the Wall Street Journal. I think Walt Mossberg has absolutely shot any opportunity he's got in getting to another launch. He's in Apple's basement now with wires on his testicles.
The fact that Tim Cook wrote him a letter back, or wrote the publication a letter back saying, yeah, the whole thing's a load of crap. You're completely off base. And the tone didn't sound congenial. So I think that was Apple's passive aggressive way of letting them know that they're done being invited to media events.
Yeah, so as a journalist, it was a very, very good email to read because I meant that, wow, there's going to be one more pre-release iPhone 10 that's going to be available in the journalism pool this fall.
Yeah, you're going now, Andy.
Yeah. But I do, you know, I when I read the journal piece, I saw a lot of facts that I recognized as being true, but what I didn't see is the context that really made you understand things like, well, if Johnny Ive is, there was a time where he was there with in a leather apron with a file and a chisel, hand tooling every single prototype, and he lived in the design lab, but that was a while ago. Now he's responsible. He was responsible for so many things, including software, including architecture, including furniture design, and elements of his life. That's when you're working at that kind of high level, if you can make your life a little bit easier by doing your job and not having to come into every meeting, why would you not do that? I just don't think the tone of the Wall Street Journal article represented what the reality was inside there. And you could really kind of read between the lines of Tim Cook's email that it's like, this was supposed to be a really lovely send-off for someone who was the one person at Apple that carried forward the spirit of Steve Jobs after we lost Steve Jobs, because even Steve referred to him as, he called him my spiritual brother, my spiritual they really had a very, very close. Exactly. They saw eye to eye on basically everything, on how products should be designed, how things should look, how people should interact with them. And it's like you have this retirement party for someone that everybody loved at the company, and there's that one person who got drunk and threw up on the photocopier and made this stink that kind of made this a less beautiful day for everybody. And I think you could see that frustration in Tim Cook's response.
Yeah, no, I think, Bob's in the chat room. He said, hasn't Tim Cook completely rubbished this? Yes, he has, mate. But if I start with that story, it's not any fun, is it?
That's right. You have to have a good setup, and nicely done, Ewan.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
You also have to catch people who on the panel who may not have read that part yet. And so, you know what? I have insiders at Apple that I'm just glad this is finally coming out. The sham that Johnny Ive's work at Apple has always been. Well, actually, the CEO has actually. Oh, didn't know that.
I think the thing is, though, right, so what it is, and this is the honest truth here, I think, most definitely, is that Johnny Ive is a bit like John Deacon out of Queen. Now Freddie Mercury's dead, it's just lost its magic. He doesn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
I think that really is it. I think there is an awful lot to that.
Yeah. My thought was that I know a lot of people that have had these amazing dream jobs. So like a friend of mine who worked for ILM and who worked on a lot of Star Wars movies, a friend that worked at NASA, and her job was a testing engineer for like life support systems. So she was working directly with astronauts. She was in spacesuits inside the neutral buoyancy tank to test out procedures and test out she and her team were developing. And you wonder, why would these people like voluntarily want to leave these jobs to do something new? And there's just a lot of people that have these brains that they just need adventure and they need new challenges and new ideas. And I really feel as though Johnny Ive was kind of champing at the bit after 30 years of primarily being a hardware tech designer to say, I really want to design a handrail for a public subway. I want to design a set of flatware. I want to design like an addition to a church that's 100 years old. He has so much ideas that can't be expressed. He gets so much talent that can't be used inside of Apple. I kind of felt as though the day was coming where he was going to say, I really, really want to do more than just tech at this point, because he really is one of those designers that he's not a designer who takes the job because to do the work of design. It's because he has this is his art. This is his philosophy. This is how he feels as though humanity interfaces with itself. And he can't be limited and boxed into just one category of product design.
You've got a friend that works at NASA who does life support testing. And all I got in my head at that point was her going, it's not working.
Do you think a Johnny Ives subway handrail, would it be too small for your palm and use T1 screws to hold it up?
No, I think it would be flush against the wall, and it would appear once you like wave your hand at a on the wall that it never with nothing on it to decide. Oh, by the way, here's where you wave your hand to make it deploy.
No, I mean, I think it would be gold and be $11,000 with Hermes stamps in it.
Depends on which city we're in.
Adrian Newey was an F1 designer for Formula One, and he went and did some stuff on the America's Cup design for the boat that Ben, what's his name, was on. Because it's just like, you know, they asked him if he'd do it, and he's like, hell, why would I not do that? I've had me fill of F1 cars for a bit. So, I totally get that. I think that's true. If you've got a 2015 MacBook Pro, you really should be taking it back and checking on the website whether you've got a problem or not. There is a website you can go and check if you go to macrumors.com. This is one of the stories on the first page. Guy has posted some pictures that prove why it's important that you should be doing the check. There's a little bit of a burn on the trackpad. Yeah, that's not too bad. We can live with that. But there's the hole on the bottom and the dripping through to China bit on his table that shows that it really is worth doing, I'm afraid. Now this is the one with the big trackpad on it, is it? The really big one. So you've got to go and put in your serial number and find out. But Apple, I'm not saying it's bad, but Apple are saying if you find it is, stop using it.
The funniest thing about this story is it's bounced around the web for the last week or so, is all of the people there were so happy to see this happening so they can come back and say, oh, could we gave everybody so much crap about the Note 7? And I think the reason why that's somewhat hilarious is the Note 7 had that happening about a week after you got your phone. This laptop is 4 years old, people. If it's having the issue 4 years later, I'm happy that they're straight going to fix it, which is basically giving these people a new computer. But don't compare those things together. They're not even in the same ball of wax.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true. I'm just about to go and check myself because I've got a 2015 MacBook Pro. And I just thought it might be good. Just talk amongst yourselves. This is good audio.
He meant he was going to grab the webs and try to feel for lumps.
Well, it kind of is, isn't it?
Can I blow your mind?
Oh, go on then. Blow our mind.
Jeff and Andy have the exact opposite facial hair. Discuss.
Oh.
So true.
We should merge them.
This is how I want to see a superimposed image.
Oh, God, that's super funny. Well, you know, Brett, that means that when ours go completely white, then we have to do something similar. Because right now, with the salt and pepper going, we have...
I call lamb chops.
Mutton chops.
My chops are almost already there. I just got to cut the middle out, though.
I'll do Castle Gates, and you can do the little goatee.
I was going to go for 1920s, like, big wheel tricycle dude. Be like, the Abner Double Day, as I like to call it.
I could totally see that on you, Doc.
I'm going to try it. I don't know. I think I always get irritated when it starts going into the corners of my mouth. So I don't know how long I can wait until I can get the Double Day going. It's almost weird because Ewan doesn't have a beard anymore.
I do. I've got stubble.
Yeah, but you used to have like a pretty, you know, manned up.
I had a goatee.
Face quaff.
I had a goatee.
The face quaff.
And can I just point out that it's not completely... See, I got a little bit of like brown left up here. It's not totally...
I thought that was coffee stain.
Fellas, do you want some gossip?
If I were to coffee stain the rest of it, it would look like it's not quite so gray or white. Wait. when I go through old pictures, it's like they were like used to be like almost like a coppery red for some reason, and so from like 2000 maybe 2001 I started getting a little bit gray. So when I start looking at these pictures, like it started going gray from up here. So it's like the progress bar on my old age as the gray sort of like crept down. And now it's at Jiggle the Mouse. I think it's stuck at the last 1% stage.
Yeah.
2 minutes remaining.
Jiggle the Mouse.
You're not getting old when it's on your head, mate. You're getting old when it's in your pubic hair. That's when you got trouble. The grey in your pubic hair region, that's the one that you can't find. I'll put my serial number in here. Do you want the gossip, fellas? Ready? Our records show that your device has already been serviced as part of this program. Or
ninjas broke in.
Yeah, but that's the cool part of the story, because then I can go on to, or it's not the affected serial range. I just thought the second that would be more, that's a better story, isn't it? You see, that's what journalists do.
You're really practicing these setups, aren't you? Delivery,
and you nailed it.
I had to make a story out of nothing. I am Apple journalism personified.
No, you're political journalism personified.
Politico tech journalism personified. This podcast is brought to you by TSO Host. We love them to bits. You need to do us a really big favor, please. Get yourself out on the socials and type in @TSO Host. Thank you for supporting @British Tech, because they keep us on the air. They pick up all the bandwidth costs, all the server time. You can get every Mac show we've ever made thanks to TSO Host. You can get every big show we've ever made thanks to TSO. You can get every copy of the news show we've ever made going back to 2008. Because of TSO Hosts, they've given us a massive server, really powerful, and they keep us running. So please, just take a few seconds, get yourself onto the socials and just say thanks to them. If you'd like to, you get 20% off your basket with the offer code BTN20. A lot of people moved over. Rob, who's in the chat room, he moved a load of people over from his customers, and he's very impressed with them so far. We had Ian, who's got, he got a notification from them that they'd found some malicious code on his site. The support actually talked through what he had to do to remove it and get it sorted out, so it all went swimmingly and he was back on within a couple of hours. They really have got a great support system as well as, so give them that social recognition, that brand recognition, and they're happy. Buy your stuff on and you'll be happy, absolutely sure. Thanks to Hoya, because they gave me glasses, and I love my glasses, and I wouldn't do the show without my glasses, and I wouldn't live without my glasses. And every time I was out without my glasses, because they were getting altered because I was no longer a fat git, I miss me glasses. So cheers, Hoya. Thank you so much for that. And when my prescription changes, please tell me I can have another set of these glasses, because I don't want to have to not. I love them. Plain and simple. Right, time for the cool things. Start us off, Doc.
You know, with all of the here, let me pop this in a link. This is going to be coming to your streets very soon. With all the talk earlier today about Synology, and I absolutely love mines. I happen to have a larger version of this, but this is a new one that they're coming out with, and it's called the DisStation 4 19 Slim, 4 base 2019. And it's slim because it's extra small. What's really cool about this, the media server stuff is built into it. It's a really small footprint. This is probably more for a Soho small office, home office, or just somebody, you know, trying to do what Andy was speaking on earlier. And if the current model of 418 runs about 350, this should be roughly in about that same area. Now, what's really cool with these guys is I always stuff mine with Iron Wolves. An Iron Wolf 8 terabyte runs about $200, $250 right now. So if you were to fill this guy up with all 10 terabyte drives, you have in RAID 6 format, you have 20 terabytes of nothing is going to happen to your data, because a Synology in RAID 6 can drop two drives at the same time and never lose a beat. I have three Drobos back there, all of which I'd be more than happy to throw into the volcano, because when they take the crap, I've even tried removing them from one Drobo case and putting them into another, and it won't build the data back. So if it weren't for Backblaze allowing you to back up externals, even though it's ridiculously large, I would have lost all of that data. So the one really cool thing about these Synology guys is they're pretty flawless. They're fast as all get. And this one would be great for a small office, home office, similar to what your friends were on about, because it does have, you know, all of the bells and whistles, but it's not the monster one like what I use, that's the thing, nice killer.
I bought the DSJ-16s, and they came with 2 8-terabyte drives in, and they were £750, so they weren't horrific, but NAS compatible. If you're buying this and you can stick whatever drives in you want, you can have a hunt around, get the drives that you like. I know I've used Western Digitals for a lot of years. I've never had a problem with Western Digital, so I kind of tend to go with them.
Ewan, there is a guy in your neighborhood who I go to for all of my NAS stuff. He goes by the name of NAS Compares. And I forget his real name. It's funny because I listen to him all the time. But I'm going to give you his link.
Your neck of the woods means he's actually in Europe.
Yeah, no, he's UK. He's UK, and his twang puts him somewhere near where you live. I'm getting a little better at guessing my twangs. I don't know exactly where he is, but he's really good though. And so if you really need someone to give you a lot of advice on this, you can actually call this guy up because he's in the UK and he's a dealer. So, I mean, he can steer your folks in the right direction, but he's always been my go-to guy for listening to what devices are good and not good. Mm-hmm. And he does a really good job of breaking them down. So
he can be my tambourine man.
Hey, get him on the show.
Yeah, no, we should.
How do you feel about using shucked drives for NAS? Because I'm on some Reddit forums that they, whenever like the Western Digital, like Easy Store external USB drives go on sale, there was, they're so cheap that I bought like 4 of them and then I cracked them open and took out the drives and they turned out to be like NAS rated drives as opposed to like usual consumer drives. And I just jumped a pin and they worked fine. The reason why I put a drive in my NAS is so that there are no worries about it ever failing. But am I being a chump?
Yeah, because I never had to jump any of my pins because Synology just works with them. But one of my biggest YouTube videos recently is probably about 10,000 views deep. But yeah, I did the same thing. I went to Best Buy. They had them on sale, and it was the 8-terabyte Easy Store. Yeah. And it turns out that it had 8-terabyte Reds in it. Well, the Easy Store on sale at Best Buy is $150. The Western Digital Red Drive, labeled, is almost $250. It's the exact same drive when we compare the serial numbers. And r/data hoarders on Reddit gives you a breakdown of what drives are in what shucks. So when you do shuck that baby, it's the same thing. And for as cheap as they are, it's like, oh, what if the warranty craps out? I don't care. It was $150. It's just thrown away.
I learned about them from the same Reddit subreddit, and I'm just worried that like maybe it's like, I know that like with LCD panels, like they all come off the same assembly line. The ones that pass the most meticulous quality checks are the ones that go into like the big name brand TVs. The ones that are a little bit off, meaning that the color isn't quite right or they got some dead pixels, they will still use them because they're not dead. But those will go in like the Black Friday quality or the no name brand quality screens. My worry has always been that it's labeled a Red, but the reason why they're not selling it as a Red is because it's not, it failed some test that makes it NAS worthy. I would love to know if it's literally that Western Digital just makes as many Red drives as they think they need, and when they find out that okay, we've got like 30,000 that we didn't need, great, we'll put those into the pipeline for Easy Store drives. I just get a little
worried. And the cool thing is, if you think about, if your Synology is set up in anything other than RAID 0, if you do have a drive problem, it's not going to kill anything. If you bought that and you set it up in RAID 0, that's kind of crazy. I wouldn't do that. But I mean, RAID 0
you say
is
that,
really,
but if you,
only
if you
for video types.
But if you're constantly mirroring, because you can set up 2 RAID 0s and mirror them.
Oh yeah, that's different. That's different.
You could do that. I'm saying that because that's what I did, and I don't want to be an idiot. Yeah.
No. All I'm saying is, for video work, that's what you have to do for speed. But for someone protecting their data, it's not a good look. For speed purposes, you do 00s.
Yeah. Good pick, mate. Thank you very much. Andy, you have a cool thing for us?
Yeah, we were talking about old keyboards, and I think someone talked about how their ADB to USB converter is no good or doesn't work anymore. I came across this a couple months ago. It's a device called the USB Wombat by a company called BigMessOWires.com. And it is a modern USB to ADB, ADB to USB converter that it's works as easily as you would want it to work. It's got a USB-A female connector. It's got an ADB female connector. You can either use it to use an old ADB keyboard with a modern Mac, or you can use it to connect a modern USB keyboard with like an old classic Mac. You just plug it in. All you have to do to set it up is insert like a jumper across a couple of pins on the board to tell it what you want it to be able to do. But after that, it just simply works. And it's exactly what I was looking for. I do have a bunch of classic Macs that I kind of like to play with. And I also like to have like one of them up and running all the time, just as a piece of decoration, but also as something to play like old games on. And I don't have that many like old ADB mouses and keyboards anymore. But the fact that I can simply buy this $49 converter and now have access to pretty much anything I want. Anytime I'm at a flea market and I pick up like an old Mac LC, there's not going to be a question of, how am I going to use this? How am I going to plug something into it? And it really does work extremely well. It's well made. I ordered it and it came like almost instantly. I think that if you check, I just checked the website. I think there's a component that they use for it that is a little bit scarce at the moment. And so they're saying there's going to be like a backlog of like 6 weeks or something. I guess I must have got like the last part of the last batch that they made. The latest batch that they made. But I do seriously recommend it. If you've got an old Mac you want to use or an old keyboard you want to use, it works great.
I've got several. We took the I've got a Mac SE prototype. It hasn't got a serial number on it. It was one of five that were made. We took it to the Apple store for a joke to see if they could fix the OS on it. and credit to them, they did. They sat and had a play with it and realized what was going on with the drive inside. But the keyboard wouldn't work, or the mouse wouldn't work, so we had to try and remember all the keyboard commands to get around, and this would have been absolutely fantastic at the time. I have bookmarked that, and I will be lighter by $49,
$59. Dude, and the floppy disk emulator is $18 on the same site, so you don't have to sit through the... You can just put everything onto an SD card and it makes it work. This is so cool.
It plugs directly into like the external floppy drive, the proprietary external floppy drive just put any sort of a card in it. And you can also, it'll work with disk images. I did order that. I didn't like a few days ago, cause I kind of didn't want to spend all my money at once, but yeah, it's great to see these companies that are engineers that are just going to say, I'm going to make something that only works on a machine that has not been manufactured since 1988.
There is a point. There is a point here as well, though, because my Mac SE, Mark Sisson was a guy who wrote in and said, "Oh, that's stiction on the drive. We used to have that problem constantly because he used to work at Apple in Canada." He said, "All you got to do is get this," and he sent me a link to where to buy a replacement drive that would be compatible. So I went and bought it. It cost me $40. Got it in here. Can't get the damn thing open. I haven't got the really long tools to get in to get the thing out.
Oh, no.
So
that's what she said.
I need to find... Yeah, Matt, that's a given. But I need to find someone in the country who's got the long tools to get in to replace the drive, and then I'm laughing. That'd be superb. if you do or know that person, then please tell them to get in touch. Great pick, Andy. It's cost me money, therefore it must be decent.
Can I one last thing that I only just noticed now? There's also for the floppy emulator, there's also the for $18 you can buy the Noisy Disk Mechanical Sounder. Indulge your nostalgia for the click clack sounds of original Apple II floppy drive. Noisy Disk adds mechanical stepping sounds to your floppy emu emulated 5.25 inch floppy disk. I like the cut of these people's jibs. I shall observe their future doings with great considerable interest.
Excellent, mate. I like that. Really good pick. Brett, give us yours.
I've been, for the last hour, trying to figure out what I was going to pick. What I've decided on is not new. It's actually, I got it refurbished. So it started, I got a Samsung T5 external SSD. It is Samsung, isn't it? Anyway, a T5. Yeah. And it worked great. If I plugged it into my 2014 MacBook Pro directly to one of the USB ports, worked great. It's USB-C technically, so it comes with a USB-C to A adapter. And if I plugged it into any hub or anything like that, I lost all speed. It went from like 400 megabits per second to like 10.
Huh. Ouch.
So I picked up an Elgato Thunderbolt 2 dock because, again, I have an old Mac. But this, I got it for $200, and it is faster than plugging these drives into USB. It gives me a hub. I can run three of them at once, and it's, I don't know, I love it. Again, I'm out of date. I'm not claiming that this is cutting edge.
No, but this is good, man.
Of course, neither is an adapter for keyboards to classic Macs, so...
No, true, but equally cool. But I thought I think it's brilliant because you were going to pick hair clippers earlier, so...
And they are so good, and I'm so tempted to talk about them. I'm just trying to fit the format better.
Mate, we love you for that. Thank you, man. But talk about your hair clippers. Come on, give us a quick pricey of your hair clippers.
Dude, okay. Thank you for letting me. Thank you for saying that.
I know it means a lot to you, so go for it, man.
So these, and I might actually have talked about these before, but I use them every week, and they're always on my mind. The Shortcut Pro Remington hair clippers are a self-haircut clipper with a rounded edge and a format that fits in the palm of your hand so you can turn it in any direction easily. A fixed length guard on them, and it's entirely waterproof. They are the ultimate in hair clippers for people, especially who keep their hair short.
So, dude, you picked these 6 weeks ago.
Yeah?
Yeah. You need to see
guys. Yeah. No, I believe that. Like, they keep coming up because I'm always thinking about them.
Yeah.
But I'm glad then that I went with the Elgato Thunderbolt 2 drive.
Well, there's a message there to all the listeners. If you get fed up of Brett picking this device, then tell us. But at the moment, no one's complaining. You just pick it.
Well, once everyone buys one, they're going to be like, yeah, okay, we know, no, we know. Stop.
Yeah, yeah. You need to put your affiliate code in.
I should. I have an Amazon link I'll give you.
Excellent, mate. Good pick. Jeffrey, what do you have for us, pal?
Cheaper than buying a Synology. It's an application for your Mac called Trip Mode. And most people that I know use Trip Mode to block services from going out on the internet when they're tethering to their iPhone, which makes sense because you don't want to burn through your whole data plan while your email starts downloading just gobs of stuff. But what a lot of people don't realize is you can also set up multiple profiles in Trip Mode, so you can use it as a tool to temporarily block services to save bandwidth. Say, like, if you're recording a show and you don't want to have big downloads happening in the background.
Yep.
So instead of having to go and quit applications or you just go to Trip Mode and choose like your podcasting profile that you set up. And I found this to be incredibly useful for me, like when I'm doing stuff like this, but it's also a great tool when I'm traveling and when I'm tethering. So this has become one of the must-have tools in my travel arsenal for my Mac. And it's, I want to say, like $9 US. It's not an expensive tool.
It's free because we all have Set App.
I forgot it's in Set App.
Okay, did you pay for it?
Look at the screen. You see that big black logo at the bottom corner?
Well, okay, so the thing is, I bought this long before it was on Set App. And so I just keep forgetting that, yeah, it's there too. Yeah,
oh, that's cool.
But you use the Set App version so that the developer gets money for it.
I bought a license.
Yeah, so delete that one and use the Set App one. That way you're supporting the developer.
Yeah, because then they get subscription money. I just found it out recently about stuff.
They only get paid when you launch the app.
Which is every single time my computer boots.
Right. So I made a script that will actually do that for you. It'll find all the apps that you run that are also on setup, and it'll switch you over.
Oh, totally do it, please.
Yeah, it's on my blog, but I'll send you a link.
Oh, you've already done it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Better.
Yeah. It's an important thing to be done. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Very important. All right. Well, I'll go hit your blog.
Okay.
Excellent pick. Thank you very much. Superb. Now, the last couple of weeks, I've been on the picking stuff, and I've wired it up to my computer, but I can't find a lightning lead. But mine is a dead simple little program called Mr. Bullet. Okay, it's available on the App Store. It's £2. It's free if you want to watch some ads, but if you want to watch it, pay £2.99, all the ads disappear. But basically, you have to shoot people, but the mode in it that you've got is the bullets ricochet around and you can end up shooting yourself. So you have to try and figure out how. So you're stuck in a really close room with someone. You got to figure out how to shoot them, but without shooting yourself at the same time. There we go.
I saw this on Instagram. They advertised it.
That's where I got it from. And it's actually hugely addictive.
I hate it when Instagram ads are right.
You don't want to give them the satisfaction, do you?
Right.
No. Because it's Instagram.
It will only encourage them.
It's just, you don't have to get it from Instagram. You just have to go to the App Store and download it. Right. And it's available, so it's addictive and tough and hard as well when you get further on it. So, and there's plenty of levels as well, which is nice, and plenty of games that come with it. Okay, sorry, I was boring you. Excellent.
That was an accident.
That's all right, mate. We know, not a problem. Where can we get a hold of you then, everyone? Doc.
All over the internets at DOCROCK, and right now currently cranking out stuff on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/DocRock.
Excellent, mate. Andy, where would you be?
Spell my last name, IHN as in Nancy, AT as in Tom, KO, and that's my Twitter, that's my Instagram, and anotgo.com is my website. Primarily, but the credit that goes beneath my name now that I'm no longer on the writing for the Chicago Sun-Times is I'm doing about a half hour of tech almost every week for Boston's National Public Radio Station, WGBH. Oh, cool. So if you go to wgbhnews.org, you can listen to me live when I'm broadcasting, or just stream it later on.
Is that a regular time?
No, unfortunately, it's like I started off like they would have me on like every a couple of times a month, and now it's almost weekly. And now I'm hoping to say, how about you just give me like a regular slot?
It's the morning
like 3 hour like news and current events show daily, and so I just come on for a half hour and talk about tech stuff.
Our regular slice of pecan and Atco. Looking forward to it, mate. I'll tune in as long as I'm awake. They're not putting you on at like 11 o'clock at night, are they? Like carry
no, no, or... usually like 11 or in the morning or noon. Perfect. So I'm not at my best. That's 20% Andy. It's like what I try to say, could you move like the morning news program to like 7 p.m., 8 p.m., 9 p.m.?
Mate, you don't want to be on at like 9 p.m., 10 p.m., because that's just out of work people and mass murderers.
You can air it in Alaska. Just like it's got to be 11 a.m. somewhere when it's 7 p.m.
Out of work people and mass murderers. I rest my case.
There you go. You think they don't buy like web hosting and stuff like that?
Yeah.
They kill people, they steal their money, and they have disposable income and poor impulse control. These are all good things for a listener if your advertiser supported.
And that's what the FBI use in their case for proof.
There you go.
Yeah.
So the government is providing you with new leads.
There we go. My mistake. I apologize. See you next month, mate. And Brett, where will you be?
Blogging at brettterpstra.com and all over social media as TT Scoff, and working on getting my podcast back up and running. There's a new episode of Overtired over at ESN.fm.
Good lad. And last but by no means least, Jeffrey.
Well, first, I have so much fun every week. This is just a blast. Yeah. And you can find me at textexpander.com and smilesoftware.com. And I'm Jay Gamut on Twitter and Instagram. And if you Google me, I'm easy to find.
Mate, this is, you know, you get, for me, this is Friday afternoon, and it's like 4 p.m. is like beer time. But it's like, no, I can't. I'm going to do the show. And as soon as I just fire everything up and the first person dials in, it's like, yeah, I'm so glad I did this. Superb. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech. We're going to be back again next Friday as normal. Crack at the Rootless was recorded this morning. We had to do it very early, unfortunately. But Jeffrey's on next week. We're recording at 1 p.m. next Friday. And it's going to be a packed show, actually. We've got Jeff on. We've got a lady named Jane Weaver on, who's a serial entrepreneur. She's coming in. And we might have a lady on as well who's a landlady at a pub that I can't mention because she's not allowed to come on. But she might be on anyway. So she's lovely. See you next week. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.